Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.
That is correct. We are indeed specialists in Bible-based content, and time now for us to get into our mental health awareness conversation. And we are going to be speaking with Yolanda Rootman, who will be speaking to us about recognizing symptoms of depression. Yolanda, good morning and welcome to the Mid-Morning Empowerment.
Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Doing so well. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Really appreciate your time and looking forward to this conversation with you.
Me too. Let's jump right into it. What's your first question for me today?
Let's jump straight into it. But before we do that, just a little bit of an introduction. Yolanda is the clinical coordinator at Vista Clinic, a role that requires her to be a bit of a jack of all trades to be able to effectively marry the clinical world with its administrative tasks. She holds a master's degree in social work, healthcare, and has a passion for creating structures and content in the mental health industry. Other responsibilities include assisting Vista Academy with the running of their CPD seminars and presenting psychoeducational groups and community groups. So clearly a lot on your table. Thank you so much. Really appreciate the time that you've taken out of your busy schedule to speak with us this morning.
It is the biggest pleasure. I will enjoy being with you guys today.
Absolutely, absolutely. So this is an interesting one. We're talking about depression, which is more than just feeling sad, like a lot of us used to think it was. It's a serious mental health condition that affects millions of people worldwide. And many people struggle to recognize the signs in themselves or others, leading to delays in seeking help. And so today we'll be exploring the symptoms of depression and how to identify when professional support is needed. So, Yolanda, would you please tell us maybe what are the most common signs and symptoms of depression?
Okay. The most common signs and symptoms of depression can vary from person to person, but they generally fall into emotional, physical, cognitive, and behavioral categories. So we're looking at an individual as a holistic being. So at Vista, we also have a biopsychosocial spiritual approach to all of our illness. And on the emotional sphere, the symptoms may be persistent sadness or a low mood, feeling of hopelessness or worthlessness, increased irritability, guilt feelings, and just kind of that feeling of numbness. Mm. On a more physical symptoms may include low energy, change in sleep patterns, appetite changes. Very often people who don't always have the emotional vocabulary will present to their doctor with aches and pains, feeling tired, feeling like they just have slow movement, slow speech. Cognitively, there's also a big demand on our energy there. So the symptoms tend to be difficulty making decisions, memory problems, finding it difficult to remember what you said to someone, what you did, a conversation you might have had, intrusive thoughts. So these thoughts that just keep on coming up and these inopportune moments, negative thought patterns. And then the behavioral symptoms for me is kind of the ones that mostly stand out because we are social beings, because we interact. This is where most people see the first inkling of there might be a problem. Mm-hmm. And this is that withdrawing from friends and family and your social activities. It's work performance that's going down. It's engaging in more risky behavior or behavior that you normally wouldn't. For some individuals, there might be a start in substance use, and then also self-harm and that reckless behavior that I was talking about earlier. So these are type of the symptoms that we look out for and like, oh, okay, so this is a good indication that there might be something underlying. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Some of the symptoms talk about
And that's hard because from that vocabulary or don't know emotionally what it is that they're experiencing, that we didn't grow up in cultures where emotions were explored. For the most part, we would go to a physician, your general practitioner, and saying, but I'm having headaches, I'm having jaw pain, I'm just feeling sluggish, I'm feeling tired, and chalk it up to those things. And then later realize, but no, this is actually a depression coming through.
Wow. And then we treat the symptoms because of that.
Yes, and very often, depending on how clued up your physician may be, very often they go to your medical reasons. So they would say it's a vitamin imbalance, get better sleep, get exercise, and all those things are very important and
Of
you should
course.
do them. It takes some time to then get to the diagnosis of, oh, wait a minute, it's more emotional cognitive issues here that's
Wow.
playing a role.
Sure. Okay. So, how then does depression manifest differently in different people?
That's a big one. I think with manifesting differently in different people is due to many factors, including age, gender, your personality, culture, and just normal life experiences that you've lived. For me, if we break it down in terms of age, your children, they wouldn't have that vocabulary to tell you something is I'm feeling this or so you see in their stomach aches. That's a big one in children. Children will come to you, especially your primary school, younger kids. They'll be like, Mommy, I have a tummy ache. I have a headache. I'm just not feeling well. A lot of clinginess and irritability. So those would most be the symptoms with your younger children. In teenagers, you'll have that anger and defiance behavior very much. Engaging in risk behavior. They'll very much withdraw from the family, but still be social with friends. Their grades will go down, performance, and then this expression of just not liking themselves. I'm a burden to others. That's self-hatred. In adults, and we have such a big rise in mental health disorders in our young people these days that it's becoming a real problem. Then with our adults, you have your classic symptoms, which we discussed, is your sadness, your fatigue, loss of interest, increase in sensitivity, appetite, and sleep patterns, self-medication, trying to solve the problem ourselves. And then we move to the elderly. And with the elderly, they would mostly deny feelings of sadness. So once again, you get your physical symptoms coming up here again, pain, fatigue, memory problems. So that also plays a big role. Then moving to gender, men also present differently than females. I think it has to do with our culture, our environment, where it's more acceptable for women to be emotional. So they'll express emotion more. They'll be more likely to worry, have anxiety about just everyday things, and ruminate, overthink a problem again and again. Where with our men, there's that anger, that aggression, that irritability, once again, that uptake of risky behavior or substance use. And then once again, those physical symptoms, that physical symptom keeps on coming through when we don't have the emotional vocabulary to tell people what we're feeling. And then culturally, it's also a lot of times people don't talk about psychiatric disorders. It's a big taboo. It's not
Very
talked
true.
about, and it should, and that can also be why people tend to mask their behaviors.
Interesting. I was just thinking as you were talking about the way age might affect, or the way that an older person, the elderly people, and their symptoms, when you talk about the pain and the sicknesses that they feel, that they would probably, in their denial, would probably chalk it up to this is just old age. We expect this in old age. So they don't even bother to go deeper and try and figure out what could actually be happening. They just think, nah, this is old age. This is what happens when you get older.
Exactly. And so much more the people around them when grandma or elderly person tells you, this is what I'm feeling. Like, oh, yeah, well, she is 60, she is 70. It's to be expected. So, as a society, we also kind of chalk it up to those experiences.
Oh man. And then for teenagers, I was thinking as you were talking about the fact that there's such a rise in younger people going through depression, I was thinking, I wonder if there's really a rise, or was it that it was always there, but we weren't allowed to be depressed. So it was like, snap out of it, whatever you're going through, snap out of it and get on with your life. Like, what problems could you possibly have? You're a child.
Exactly. It's that thing where you're kind of like, whoa, what kind of problems do you have? But I read a statistic the other day that was kind of like, it was just, whoa, the amount of stresses that our high school students have today is the amount of stress that individuals that were hospitalized in psychiatric clinics in the 70s.
No.
Yeah, so in the 70s, this amount of stress that have been enough to have you clinically admitted to a psychiatric institution,
oh my
where today
word.
It's the normal accepted stress rate for a teenager.
Yeah.
And that plays a massive role. So it may have been more we're talking, there is more openness to it, but also the pressures on our young people have just become,
it's not the same. Yeah. Yeah.
So
for
much
sure.
more.
Yeah.
So much more.
My daughter is in grade 7 this year, and I would like to, please, I went to school, okay? But sometimes when she brings her homework to me and she's like, I need help with this, I'm like, wait, I need to quickly just quickly go back to Google. How do you do this again?
And it is some of that homework, you look at it, you're like, I think I did this at varsity,
exactly. I know for sure I did not do that in grade 7. But anyway, what are some more subtle symptoms that people often overlook?
I think if once again, going back to your first question, it's those emotional and cognitive, you know, the ability increase in sensitivity, guilt, shame, brain fog, overthinking, all those things we've mentioned, social isolation. But for me, it's not so much about the symptoms that we overlook that is the red flag, but it's more the unconscious coping mechanisms that adopt to try and make up for these subtle symptoms. When the symptoms are there and they're prominent, that's when we start to recognize them. The problem comes in when we have these very subtle symptoms that we most often can chalk up to or relate to something else. And then we have to compensate with other coping mechanisms. And it's always those ones that stand out for me. So when you find yourself, once again, having more muscle tension, body aches, changes in appetite, those physical things like, oh, maybe I should like look out for that. But the overworking and the overcommitting to things is, it's a way of trying to keep that control, that trying to stay busy, trying not to be alone with my thoughts. It's a way of compensating. Then we have that doom scrolling, like social media, sitting for hours. I'm also guilty, I know.
Yep.
Sitting for hours on that Instagram, that TikTok, that Facebook, that Pinterest, depending what your guilty pleasure is, or watching TV and just kind of getting lost in these activities where you're no longer engaging in, oh, I'm going out with friends, I'm making plans, engaging in my spirituality, engaging in house chores, playing with my children, craving comfort. So you'll also find there's this wanting for fatty foods, comforting foods, your rices, your pastas, your cheeses. You don't want to eat healthy anymore, not having energy to do things. So for me, those are the subtle symptoms that stand out more. Not the symptoms so much, but what am I doing to compensate for these symptoms? Hyperfixation on a new interest, or just extreme perfection, having this really, I have to be a specific way, dress a specific way. All of these things are ways to cope. All of these things are trying to take control of my environment or keeping busy, so I'm not so much in my thoughts or the problems that I'm facing.
Sure. As you're speaking, I'm just thinking this is why it's so difficult to figure out when someone is going through depression, because some of these things just sounds like stuff that everyone is doing.
Exactly. And that's what makes it so difficult. As with everything, illness, especially in mental health, it's a spectrum. It's not you either have it or you don't. Yeah. It is to what degree and to what level do you have it.
Sure. So how can someone differentiate between temporary sadness and clinical depression? This is where I think many people kind of get confused. Everyone gets sad sometimes. We go through difficult situations. We lose loved ones. We lose our jobs. Things happen and everyone gets sad. But what's the difference now? How do we know that, okay, this is a problem now?
Okay, so there's a few things that we can do to check on that. So number one is the cause or the trigger. With a temporary sadness, usually it's linked to a specific event.
Yes.
So you mentioned losing a loved one, a breakup, a disappointment. That sadness, I can link it to something. You can tell me this happened and that's why I'm sad.
Right.
With a clinical depression, there's no clear trigger. You can't say this is, it just feels like everything. The duration, a typical sadness lasts for a few hours, maybe a day or so. the depression, you're going to go into weeks, at least 2 weeks. The intensity of sadness is your mood still fluctuates. There's good mood moments. They still happen. You still have good moods. Depression side, constantly low mood. The ability to enjoy things for a temporary sadness, you still find pleasure in hobbies or socializing. So you might be going through a breakup, but if your friends invite you out for dinner or you go to a hobby, you can still enjoy that. Where with clinical depression, there's none of that enjoyment. Coming back to those physical symptoms, it's a temporary tiredness and restlessness that normally lasts a few days. Clinic depression, it's just, it's a constant fatigue. It's normal for your self-worth to drop when you're going through a sad time, but your values still stay intact. You still have that self-awareness and self-love. But that disappears more with the clinical depression. And then once again, that hopelessness and suicidal thoughts, that's not so prevalent in a sadness. It is rarely present if it is, but it's definitely present in a clinical depression. So I've created a list for a few checks that you can do to see if this is sadness or depression. And the first check is a time check. How long has this lasted? Has this been more than 2 weeks? If you have to say yes, then that might be a red flag. Your functionality check. Is it becoming harder for me to work? Is it harder for me to take care of myself? Then number three is your joy check. Do I still find joy and happiness and relief in things that I do? And then the last check is my hopelessness check. Do you feel that things can improve? Do you feel like you there's hope for the future? You just have to get through the stage. If you said yes on those things, it might just be a sadness, a little bump in the road. If you've kind of said no, most of my answers there is I don't feel joy. I feel hopeless. I'm not functioning. It's more of an indication of clinical depression.
Yeah, it sounds like a really, really dark place to be. To be in the space where nothing can, it seems like nothing can get you to, lack of a better word, snap out of it. Like time with friends and family, music, entertainment, church, prayer, nothing can get you out. You're just in this dark space.
Yeah, and it's so sad. And this is why so often people say it's this absolute hopelessness. And it's a chemical reaction in your body. It's a physiological response. There's something prohibiting you from getting joy out of these activities.
Wow.
And this is why it's so difficult. And that's why it's so important for people to become aware of your emotions, become aware of your interactions, talk to the people around you and really start looking at these symptoms, recognizing them and realizing when is the time to reach out and ask for help.
Now, you mentioned earlier that this is kind of on a spectrum. So it's not like you either have it or you don't. At what point would someone need to seek professional help for depressive symptoms? If I'm still trying to figure out, or maybe I have figured out that this is more than just a mere sadness, but I think I've got it under control. You know, I think I just need some time. I don't know. But at what point would someone need to seek professional help?
For me, it always comes down to functioning. Okay. So if you're experiencing that persistent sadness, lack of motivation, that self-destructive thoughts for more than 2 weeks, and you're just not as functional, or you experience yourself as not as functional as you used to be, that's when you reach out. The earlier you reach out, the easier it is, the more effective treatment can be, and the less you have to suffer alone in that time. So, but if you have the question, for me, it's always don't wait for the symptoms to happen to you. If you're asking yourself the question, why not reach out?
Okay.
Why not have that checkup?
Yeah.
Go to your GP, ask yourself those little questions. Am I experiencing joy? Am I still functioning? Am I overcompensating? And if you have a question, rather just check it out. There's got no harm in that.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Yolanda, for coming through. We'll be connecting with you again on Wednesday to have another mental health chat. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Awesome. Have a lovely day.
Thank you.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.